Hello and welcome in to the latest edition of the Rebel Room. I'm Taylor Byrne alongside Case Kiefer and Ray Brewer going through the biggest things in UNLV athletics throughout the week. And with a bye week for the football team, that means we are starting on the hardwood. Last Thursday, open scrimmage at Thomas and Mack Center, the currently under renovation Thomas and Mack Center. So those of you who went out to that event got to see some of the new things that are going on there. A lot of it just ease of use type of stuff, widening the walkways along the concourse, working on just it's an old building, a lot of the infrastructure type of needs that had to be updated within there. But there'll also be some bells and whistles that are added to it, and Ray Brewer, who is at that event, can get into that. He wrote about it for LasVegasSun.com. But also then we want to talk a little bit about this Thursday's event downtown, the Running Rebel Madness event or something. I'm not sure if that's the exact name, but it gets at the general idea, which is basically a dunk contest and just kind of Vegas. They're calling it Vegas, in quotes, Vegas style introductions and like a party atmosphere, a music festival type atmosphere. That's what they're going for. How effective that will be, what there will be beyond introductions and a dunk contest, I can't even tell you for sure because there hasn't been a whole lot of info out there on that. But it seems like it should be a good time. I definitely think it's a good idea of this having, you know, they're taking Jerry Tarkanian Court outdoors, setting it up downtown over by the D. Just having that type of environment event seems like a good idea to me. I know they did it 5 years, 5 years ago now. For Dave's first year, but just starting looking back at the scrimmage that we just got through, Ray, you know, what did you see from the guys, and anybody surprise you one way or the other?
I think first Taylor, Ike, say the last name,
Nuamu,
is built like, listen, if I'm going to get in a fight somewhere, I'm going to have this guy on my team.
He's a big guy.
6'5", and he looks like he should be playing middle linebacker for the Raiders. And I watched him in warmups, and he had real good stroke. In the games, the stroke didn't quite continue in the scrimmage, even though he did have, I think, 13 to lead his team in scoring. But you could tell where his maturity, his experience is going to play a difference. And the guy is just physically well put together. I think when you're looking at, you know, trying to predict how this UNLV team will be, having experienced players like him and Seegers at the point only going to help UNLV. So he impressed me, and I think he impressed most. And then I just, you know, just the fact that it appears they are going to play at a higher pace and they are going to pressure in the full court. And that's what we've been waiting for, right? And it looks like finally either A, they've given in and they're going to be married to it and live or die by it, or B, maybe they have the personnel to get it done. I thought Jordan Cornish, the improvements from year one to year two were crystal clear, obvious. I think when you're talking about how the team's going to be put together in minutes, I think he's going to be a key piece off the bench where you're not going to lose much when you take out whomever he's going to replace. I think you got obviously a lot of options, which we'll talk about. Pat McCaw, relatively silent. I think he was 1 of 5, didn't score to the end. For whatever that's worth. Ben Carter, transfer from Oregon. Crafty. I don't know if you like that word, but
well, you're only using it because he's white.
He is crafty, though.
Who name a black basketball player who's been described as crafty?
On UNLV or
anywhere?
All-time?
Crafty is for left-handers and white guys.
Okay, you know who I think is really crafty? Who's the West guy? He plays for San Antonio now. Came from Indiana. David West. He's crafty. He's smart.
He's smart.
He knows how to maybe pull his shirt underneath the post and not get caught for it.
Okay, so you're saying that's what Ben Carter does well?
I think Ben Carter knows how to play basketball. I don't necessarily think his athleticism is going to jump off the charts and win UNLV some games. And when he shoots from the outside, it's rather awkward looking. But
something I wish he would do less in his game, especially since, you know, other UNLV big men also want to drift away from the court. You need, like, make your name being a back to the basket mm-hmm. post up guy, but that's neither here nor there. I know a lot of people have the same complaints that I do with just big guys in general. What did you think of the press? How did it look?
I mean, with the press, there's a few things that could happen positively. Obviously, you wear the other team out, you get the ball, you force them into making bad decisions, you get them into their offense later, but you could either A, give up some baskets, or B, get in foul trouble. And granted, the referee crew was who you'll see working like the basic Foothill JV game later in the winter. They called a lot of fouls where you were just like, really, that's a foul? And you probably won't see that, but fortunately, UNLV appears like it has some bodies to keep fresh and when the fouls come. But I thought it was great. You know, they got some instances where, you know, they were able to double-team in a corner where it worked out. Again, I'm going to be like you and some of the others and wait and see how it is on game day. But at least during the scrimmage, you know, it produced a few turnovers, some moments of uncertainty for the team on offense.
Yeah, Rice said that they're never coming out of it. And you mentioned what I think a big part of running the press is, which is just taking down the clock before the opponent can get into their offense. You take 5 seconds off the shot clock for everybody, so now it goes down from 35 to 30. And so if you're pressing them and pressuring them the way that you want to, a lot of times it's going to be 15 to 18 seconds on the clock by the time they get started. You know, it's going to take some time to get it across, and then you kind of wait to get set for a second. So there could be a lot of times where half the shot clock is gone by the time the opponent really gets any real start to their offensive possession. And that's what it's going for. It's not going to be VCU's havoc where it's constantly trying to chase and cause turnovers, but there's going to be elements of that. Or at least it seems like there are. I would definitely think that that's more the exception than the rule, a lot of the trapping in the backcourt, but no one knows. You know, based on what I've seen in practice so far, it's hard to tell, you know, what percentage might be kind of backcourt trapping and what percentage might be just full court man-on-man press. And I'm not sure that the coaches even know. I think that's something that they have to figure out sort of as it goes. But Case, jump to you here. Just kind of what are your sort of overall impressions, expectations of what this group could be? Ray and I have talked about it. They're committing themselves to a certain style. They seem to have the depth for it, but you have to be able to actually put these type of things together. And it's so early, none of us can say for sure kind of what this is going to end up looking like. But from what you've followed throughout the offseason and the little you've seen so far, sort of where are you at with what you think this year's roster is going to be?
Yeah, well, I just hope they stick with it is the one thing that I remain kind of skeptical on and I'm worried about. I love all the plans and everything you guys have said and reported. I just hope it, you know, doesn't get off to a rough start and they say, okay, we're ditching this. But I think I have pretty high expectations, at least compared to the last couple years. I just love the depth on this team. I'm obviously not as entrenched as you guys and haven't kept up as well in the off season, but I just, every time we sit down and talk about it, Brewer's excited about a different guy, or, you know, you're spouting off what this guy can do. And I think that's something that I'd be excited about if I was a UNLV fan. And that's also pretty beneficial to the style that they're going to supposedly play to have all those bodies.
Yeah. And Dave says they're never coming out of it, you know, and as I said, that doesn't mean that they're going to be trapping and doing all this different stuff, because I don't know how big of an element that's going to be. But he says that they're never coming out of it. Every dead ball after made basket, made free throw, out of bounds, just every time the opponent is inbounding in any of those situations, there's going to be a full court press, pressure, however you want to term it, from UNLV. And
the made free throw may be a problem.
Why?
Well, last year they made, what, 64%? I wrote about this.
Well, yeah, but in conference play they were really good at it.
Oh, were they?
Yeah,
well, they must have been awful.
They went from like worst in the league non-conference to best in the league for a while.
Oh, shout out to them. My
in
bad.
Conference play. Ike Nwamu was 6 of 6 in that scrimmage the other day.
Now, he was.
Now your boy Good Luck Okonobo, who every time I talk to him is convinced that he's a good shooter, went 1 for 7.
I want to ask the Rebel fans, not you, Taylor, because you were probably an apple in your mom's eye in 1990. But
no, I was three.
Three. You were three. Case was four.
No, I was three.
He was three.
Oh,
you guys were two weeks apart.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. But But the school thing worked out where you went to school later than
yeah.
he did?
Yeah, he was a year ahead of me.
Okay. That's crazy. I love the school system.
Probably our parents' decisions in separate states, but
yeah.
okay.
Who's the worse or better free throw shooter in UNLV history? Good Luck or Moses Scurry?
I mean, I'm going to guess Moses Scurry because I feel like that's where this is headed.
When he would make a free throw, it was like everybody gets a Whopper from Burger King after the game type of thing. He was horrid. Look up the
numbers. But did he think he was good?
I don't think he thought he was good. I mean, Good Luck was like 33%.
Yeah, Good Luck keeps saying that he's good-handed.
Look at – use that computer thing of yours and Google Moses Scurry free throw percentage.
You have to keep talking while
All I'm saying is that not to rip on Good Luck because I love everything else about him, his reach, his defensive ability, his passion and enthusiasm. He's my guy, other than the fact I won't want him on the free throw line to cover the spread or to win the game.
Which is fine. You know, you don't need everybody being good at it. I've just always found it funny that he's convinced that his jump shot is great and that he's a really good free throw shooter. At least he was last time I talked to him about it, and his percentages were not good then either. So it's good to be confident.
Until Air Force does a hack of Good Luck.
The dose of reality doesn't hurt. Yeah, especially when there are multiple teams that were just like, we're just going to foul that guy and we're going to win because of this. That is our plan. Whether it's going to work or not, we're going down with that. I've not found his percentage yet because, believe it or not, stats were not kept quite as well back then. But I'll be sure to get back to you on this very I was going to say 47%, but I think that's a team thing. So we're not positive on Moses Scurry's free throw percentage, but we also – I believe your point there was that good players can still be terrible free throw shooters.
Yeah, Moses was a work in progress offensively, as is the St. John's transfer for UNLV, another name that I'm going to struggle with, Chris
– Obekpa.
Yep, that's good. It's always good when there's a 14-player roster, and I know going in that any time we do a Rebel Room, I'm going to have to refer to him as that kid from Mercer or the St. John's transfer. Or, hey, Chris, help me out, Taylor.
You can just stick with first names. They've got and what you're talking about is the three Nigerian-born, or not all born in Nigeria, but bloodlines directly there in – Good Luck Okonobo, Ike Nwamu, and Chris Obekpa.
Okonobo, I'm locked in on.
You got that one?
So I'm batting. I'm like him at the foul line, 33% all year.
So that's what happened last Thursday. The open scrimmage went to overtime, I think I saw.
Yeah, that was a point of they played. They said, okay, it's going to be 2 6-minute halves, which I'm like, well, why do we even show up for 6 minutes?
Tell everyone I told you it was going to be about that long and probably wasn't worthwhile, but just for the record.
So then they go to the overtime after we thought that whatever, one of the two teams, I forgot Scarlet or Gray, had won by 1 point, not that anybody cared. And then the first play, McCaw like banged knees with somebody. They're like, oh my God. If Rice decided to extend this to overtime, yeah. Big Zim. Had 10 boards. I'd say very curious, as everybody else is, about how he's going to perform this year. Obviously, he's likely a one and done, and more power to him if he could get paid. But we'll see how he progresses.
So if Derrick Jones isn't in Thursday's dunk contest, and it seems like he won't be, he was the runaway favorite for this. But there are three other contenders, three guys who either have won or had Ronald McDonald screw them out of winning dunk contests very recently, and that's Zimmerman, freshman guard Jalen Poyser, and senior Ike Nwamu. I think I make Nwamu the favorite with Jones not in the field. Where do you guys go with this one?
I like Zim's creativity. I feel like he's going to have something a little off the wall. The question is if he can convert it. But I might, if I'm getting long odds, I'm gonna make a totally square bet, because I'm sure everyone will be on Zim, the big recruit. But I've seen Zim throw down some pretty sick dunks in my day, so I'm gonna go with that familiarity. And
I feel like if we were to post this, Zim would end up the favorite. And so that's where I would like the value play on Nuamu. And now this definitely depends on who's actually judging this, because I don't know the format for that. So maybe the very same people who would just vote it for Zimmerman anyway are the ones who are in charge of this.
I don't know. He has to win just because he's the local guy that we're warming up to, or that we've warmed up
to. I think everybody's pretty warm.
Yeah, but we like him. He likes us.
Doesn't mean he's the best dunker.
It doesn't matter, Taylor. I mean, he's our guy. He's going to win the dunk contest. It's over with.
All right, so we're cheating in order to get the local kid a dunk contest victory, according to Ray Brewer.
I might even get him a ring for it.
That's
you love rings.
That's
get rings
that's
for
very
everything.
True. That's what's coming up Thursday, 7 to 9, outside of the D. Go there, attend it. It should be fun. I will be on hand. Ray, are you going to be there?
I was thinking about taking my son, who is, as you know, through his early childhood.
You're trying to make sure he's a Rebel fan.
Had little interest in athletics, and now that he's a – he scored 6 goals in 6 games in his U5 soccer league. Shown a little interest in sports. I figured maybe I'll treat him to a Slurpee and take him down there.
How about that? What a great dad. So that's what's coming up here on Thursday. It is the bye week for football. And so we'll get into the Boise State matchup on next week's Rebel Room. But just quickly wanted to take some time to look back at what happened there Friday night at Fresno State. UNLV has the game. Not necessarily in hand, but certainly in a good position, up a couple of scores in the second half, and then just like a week before, a very winnable game, one that they had a lot of chances to put away and just weren't able to do it. The offense couldn't get going when they needed it to. The defense, and this was kind of the bigger – it's amazing to say that this was a surprise this season, but the defense was not good outside of a couple of drives to start the second half. Just couldn't handle a Fresno State team that hadn't been able to rack up yards on anybody all year and ends up losing there at Fresno State. So take the West Division title off the table. I think take bowl eligibility off the table. Those are no longer attainable. Ray, just kind of what's the takeaway, the mood after another setback there in conference play?
Well, unfortunately, I didn't get to watch the game because it was during preps. And I saw the score on Twitter, and somebody's like, yeah, I'm cashing my over bet. And I thought they had won, and then I got a text from somebody that was like, why didn't they kick the field goal? And I'm like, oh, my God, did they lose? Like, yeah, where have you been? And, you know, I think that the mood still is that there's some winnable games down the home stretch. You know, the bar was kind of established at 2, so I think they're right there with it, considering one of the two was Reno. You still have to feel good about yourself. And, you know, I'm always the glass half full type of guy, Taylor. And I think UNLV, considering all of its deficiencies that we've brought up from the summer through now, the fact that they've won 2 games, they've been competitive in 3 others, but they haven't been able to finish, to me that's an indicator that your ones are serviceable and you've made them competitive. But if they get tired or you have to start mixing in some 2s. Right now, they just don't have the Jimmies and the Joes.
Sure.
Well, I can't use that phrase.
That's I've never heard it before.
Well, I've heard that cliche a ton. I just wish you didn't go. You went the whole way with the cliche. It's not about the X's and O's. It's the Jimmy and Joe.
Oh, actually, okay. It's like the biggest cliche. I have heard it's that like, full thing.
It's like the most ridiculed cliche probably of I think it's kind of died because people were so sick of it. That's why I was cracking up that you brought it back up.
That's funny. Ray, you sort of got to it here. If people could fast forward from August to look at where UNLV is at heading into its bye week, I think everyone's probably – they're fine with it. Close losses to San Jose State and Fresno State. Got the cannon. 2 wins. Like, that's okay. Does the fact that I think winning in Reno and looking at the rest of the league – altered expectations, does that mean that it's now a disappointment, or should we still, you know, is it more important to remember what we kind of felt in August or how it's progressed week to week? I'm not sure the exact answer there, but I know that they're, you know, very different ways of looking at these things.
I mean, it's what have you done for me lately is the nature in sports. If the Reno game was at the end of the year and they won at the end of the year, you'd feel great about yourself. But now that they won the game and we look and we're like, oh my gosh, look at winnable games here. Remember after the game, we're talking, oh, they could win at A, B, C.
Well, yeah, you were booking your trip to the bowl game.
Yeah, I was. I mean, I was. I was right there. I mean, who wouldn't have been after that night?
Case and I.
No, you guys are
we said it was more possible.
We said it was a stretch.
Here's the deal with you guys, seriously. And if you disagree with me on this, you're crazy. You guys have always been, and I've always been with UNLV. Things are on the up and up. Glass is half full. Hell yeah. Let's do it. Let's be great. And you guys have always been, this is UNLV. Glass is half empty. Don't get your hopes up. Here's some problems. You're going to need to get lucky in this spot, which is fine. That's your mentality. That's how you guys approach it. And I'm fine. I respect that. Just like you respect me. And you know what? I've earned your respect because I've been wrong, and I have no problem saying I am wrong.
I'll let Case go.
I don't necessarily agree that.
But you're pumping for him saying understand. He doesn't agree?
Because I feel like. No, I especially don't agree right now because, like, the loss, two losses in a row, both extremely close that could have gone the other way. I don't feel like I'm glass half empty right now at all. I'm sure there are fans way more dismayed than me with where they are. I think going back to your original question of, you know, if this was where we were at the beginning of the season, how would we feel? I think I would say this is a success so far. I think Tony has still done a great job, and I liked his attitude after this game. I don't think past I was stunned reading Taylor's stories how hard he came down on himself and the team. I mean, it really is he's trying to change the culture and the expectation.
Closest thing he's been to pissed in postgame.
Yeah, and I don't feel like I'm glass half empty. I think they're in a good spot right now. I'm not unhappy with where they are at all. I was just saying I definitely did not say they were becoming bowl eligible after the UNR win.
Losers are going to find a way to lose.
And now who's the negative one?
Yeah. Yeah, with that said, you know, not to get too X-y and O-y, I'll give you one anecdote here before we close up. I think the interest in the team, boys, is going to definitely decrease by about 40% now that basketball's picking up. You know, the writing's on the wall with kind of the outcome of the season. And I'm interested to see how Tony, who's been such great at marketing himself and the program and what they're trying to do, and so adamant that he gets community support, how he kind of reacts to that. Secondly, God, they need a quarterback, bro. I mean, and if you look, okay, well, say Decker graduates, and next year you got Palandek, you got
Dalton Snead.
Yeah, Snead.
The plan has always been to bring someone else in also.
Yeah, but
it has to be somebody good enough.
Yeah, who will be a true freshman or a JC can transfer, yeah. Or do you bring a four-year guy in? I don't know. But the offense, I think they've done a good job running the ball.
For the most part, yeah. But they're also better at running the ball with Decker in the game, which is part of the reason I've not understood why he likes Palandek better. But he does. And I think maybe they'll look towards Decker more for the Boise State game, but I don't understand it. The kid does some good things.
Decker?
Palandek.
Palandek.
But it's never
– Throwing is
it's,
not
it's,
one
It's
of
never
them.
Made sense to me going into a game with him as the starter.
Especially, I think it was a reminder of that late in the game because I actually did turn on the second half of the fourth quarter when I got home from high schools, and God, he looked like a disaster, and it seemed like he had a better start to that in the game maybe, and then it just kind of reminded you of who he was. That, you know, he still has these struggles. And I think that was more emblematic of the whole team. To me, this game just showed, like, UNLV, there are still very few teams in the country that are working with less than they are talent-wise. This team just, I don't feel like, has a lot. So to be 2-5 right now, I just, and be in two games that easily could have gone the other way, I feel like this is a success. When you look up and down the roster, what they don't have much. And I think they've overachieved, to be honest.
And the defense that, you know, finally I think resembled last week what we thought they would be. I mean, let's be honest. They've been great. With the exception of the Fresno game, you know, we all had assumed, and I think maybe even if you asked the coaches off the record, they might have assumed that they would have been this team that gave up 200-plus on the yard in the ground all season. And that's kind of what they – that first game against Northern Illinois, they held them – in check in the first half. And I think Northern Illinois, if you look back, rushed for like $190 in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, I think you also made a good point about what the support is going to be from here on out. It could have been heading into the bye week at 4-3 with a lot of possibilities on the table. Instead, it's 2-5. And I don't think that means that the sky is falling, because I picked them to win 3 games preseason. But I do recognize the people who, in the moment after the Reno game, look at this and say, okay, why can't we go and compete with these teams? Well, like I said at the time, just because you have winnable games doesn't mean a team that usually finds a way to lose those games is suddenly going to win them all. I think they'll win a couple. You still got the Wyoming game as a good possibility.
Hawaii
at home. I don't even want to get into that. My picks were so terrible this week. Burns' eye view of the Mountain West was crap. It was 1-5. The only solace I take in that is that I kind of predicted it was going to happen in the write-up, because the same thing happened last year. Second or third kind of week into conference play, right when I feel like I know what should happen, then it just completely gets away from me. That's what happened there.
Nothing soothes my soul more than knowing that Reno's going to have to stick with Poling another year because they can't afford to get rid of him.
At least you've got that going
for
you.
I mean, when I wake up every day and I say, what's going to get me going today? And I'm like, Cannon Games in Vegas next year.
All right, that's what does it for Case, for Ray. I am Taylor. We will talk to you guys next week.